Well, hey, everyone. Here we are for this week's culture segment. Great to have a friend of Boundless here, Alex Chediak. You've heard him on the show before. He loves talking about college, among other things. But he is the author of Thriving at College. He's the author of a number of Boundless articles, so you can search for him on our site and see what else he's had to say. In fact, this week's feature article is by Alex as well, so check it out. So Alex, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Lisa.
Hey, very fun to have you. He is, you know, when he's not doing stuff with Boundless and or writing books, he's actually at California Baptist University and a professor,
yes.
Right? Okay. Mm-hmm. And you have been like for a long time now.
8 years.
Eight years. Yeah. Okay. All right. So he knows the world of the college student, but he also does a bunch of other stuff too, maintaining, like I said, writing and speaking and all that. His new book that we're going to actually talk about today is called Beating the College Debt Trap, Getting a Degree Without Going Broke. Is this even possible? I don't know. We're going to have to ask him because experientially from the people I'm talking to, especially in their 20s who feel like, no, this did not happen for me. We'll see what Alex has to say. So this will be a fun combo. Ooh,
thanks. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. We're going to start off by talking about, actually, I would love for you, Alex, to just kind of set the scene for us. Namely, why are we actually in the hole that we're in? Because I rarely hear, you know, I rarely heard my grandparents talk about just being saddled with all this debt after they went to their, you know, accountant school or whatever they did after coming out of the war, or even, mm-hmm. you know, my parents' generation and stuff. Why in the world is college such a fearful thing at this point when it comes to anticipating it, paying for it, and making it even worth your while? Why has this generation really gotten into this kind of sketchy situation?
Right. So more people are going to college than ever before. Mm-hmm. Supply demand makes prices go up. When lots of people want something, it tends to cost more. Think about an iPhone, anything like that. Mm-hmm. Prices go up. Having a good college has cost more money because the infrastructure to build the buildings mm-hmm. has cost more as you get more wireless technology. Millions are spent now on information technology, antivirus things, all the things that go with the electronic internet age that we're in. Mm-hmm. Colleges are spending more on amenities. Colleges are spending more because of regulations on the colleges that require them to document everything you can imagine. And then there's a lot of competition for students, so you spend sometimes to have a better X, Y, or Z, cafeteria, mm-hmm. Student center, recreation center, academic building. So some of the competition drives more spending. And then statewide, in the state schools, the funding has gone down. When the recession hit, it went down hard and it hasn't really come back. So the funding per pupil at the state universities is not there. So we're seeing the debt load rise among students who are going to public schools. Mm-hmm. Then you also have the fact that trying to get a job with a high school degree mm-hmm. is pretty much hopeless nowadays, where, you know, 30, 40 years ago, it was very doable, even to have a stable career. Now it's getting just about impossible. So everyone's wanting to get some kind of degree, usually a four-year bachelor's degree.
Yeah.
And so that's driving more people to it. And then the wages of new employees haven't gone up.
Okay.
So we're talking about student debt.
Right.
It would be more sustainable if wages were rising in the country. Census Bureau just came out with a study last week, actually, that in the last 7 years, the median household income has decreased by 6.5%.
Hmm.
So new hires are seeing the same exact phenomena.
Yeah.
So when you have wages that are stagnant for new graduates and they're spending more for college, their ability to pay that back is very limited.
Okay. That's interesting. I want to circle back to what you said about basically just having a high school diploma at this point. But to your point about colleges offering amenities, when I went to school and I went to a private Christian university, the food, for example, was you walked through a line and got a scoop of some form of, you know, non-distinguishable casserole or whatever. In fact, one of the guys who worked the food line was this old dude who would strap a sponge to his forehead to like catch the sweat. And we called him the sponge man. And now I just went back this spring to speak at my alma mater. They have an entirely new dining hall student center that has a stone fireplace in it. They have this massive like smorgasbord with gluten-free and organic options and all this stuff. And I'm like, where was this when I was in school? Because we didn't eat any of this. So I hear what you're saying there. Okay, let's talk about this whole high school slash college situation, because I've heard it said before that it is better to have a four-year degree in anything than to not have gone to school. That, oh, well, if you just want to get a job, you know, just make sure that you go to college, even if you don't really know what you want to do, just get a degree. And to me, that seems a little bit short-sighted, or you are going to be wasting a lot of money if you don't have direction.
Yeah, I think you need to have some sense of direction on how you're going to use that diploma when you graduate. And it is true that just on paper, you look at somebody who has a bachelor's degree versus someone that doesn't have a bachelor's degree. Mm-hmm. The gentleman with the bachelor's degree is a little more employable, because the employer knows that person has had the perseverance to, you know, go to class, get their work done, at least to a minimum degree.
Okay.
They've done the work. So in one sense, I understand that advice. Mm-hmm. The flip side is, because it's so expensive, that might not be the case anymore, especially at some schools more than others. But it could really be detrimental in terms of getting $60,000 in debt and then be working a job that you could have been working with a 2 years associate's program.
Yeah,
I'm thinking of a family that I know right now where they've got four daughters. Three of them went to college and studied disciplines that weren't directly correlated to a specific job.
Okay.
They weren't training to become engineers or doctors or nurses or finance people, accountants, that kind of thing. More of a broad education, and then they struggled in the job
market. Welcome to my life. Yeah.
And one of the girls went to a 2-year program in interior design, worked the entire time while she was in school, now has a good job, making good money, has no debt. Her sisters all have debt and are all working in underemployment situations where they're not really using their degree in
their
job.
Right.
So ironically, it ended up working better for the person that had the 2-year program.
Yeah, that's true. Well, and to that point, and throughout the book, you outline what you describe as traps, you know, that that prospective college students, you know, college students and even those outside of college get into. And one of those is the assumption that, you know, well, I'm just going to go and get this 4-year degree, when not everyone necessarily needs to do that for the purpose of what they would like to do someday. I mean, I know plenty of people, 20-somethings in my church, who are going into whether it's a trade or massage therapy or, you know, doing something like that. Is that a decision, though, that needs to be found out in high school? Or how do you even set yourself on a trajectory for where you should head?
So I think ideally the sooner the better, but obviously start now. If you're not, if you didn't do it a year ago, that's okay. It's never too late to start thinking about what you should be doing with your career after you graduate. But I think more than ever, it's important that college students, whether associate's or bachelor's degree, have a sense of how they're going to use that degree when they graduate. There needs to be more intentionality, because the prices are what they are, right? 50 years ago, you could go to college and discover yourself while you were at college, and you could work in the summer and pay for all your bills. Now that's not really possible anymore.
Yeah.
Well, it's very difficult to do. So, but to your point, economists predict that there's going to be a large growth in the job market for those with middle skills, what they mean by something more than high school, but something less than a 4-year degree.
Okay.
And we don't have as many people going into those fields, because more than ever, the high schools send people to 4-year colleges. So there is kind of an assumption among high school academic teachers, the guidance counselors, that we're going to measure ourselves at the percentage of our graduates that go to a 4-year college. And what they're missing is the value of, hey, maybe that young man would be better off as a mechanic or a beautician or a massage therapist or one of the other professions that requires less expensive education but can still make a good living. Technology and healthcare, the 2-year programs are very in demand. And the average salary coming out of associate's program is larger than the average salary for a bachelor's degree if you're in technology or healthcare.
Yeah, that's interesting. Okay, so how, you know, especially like say we're talking about the 4-year degree here or whatever, how do you even know that your major or chosen career path is even worth it? Because it seems very like, I went into English because it was the thing that I could do with the most ease, with the least amount of effort. And I just figured, oh, okay, well, maybe I'll just teach English someday. Well, then I got in and I realized I don't even care about teaching people. So then I was like, now I got to figure out something else to do with this. So, and actually, quite frankly, I thought my college professors were like weird and I didn't want to become like them. So so it was kind of a wake up call. So how do you know? I mean, how can you translate a good, you know, major into something that actually has earning power?
Well, I think that you can utilize your degree. Well, your degree is what you make of it in terms of how hard you work in the classroom on your assignments, on your papers. So like a liberal arts degree, I think is still valuable if a student applies himself diligently. Mm-hmm. There are some universities that have made it a fluff program, easy courses, not much reading, reading trendy pop culture things, courses on Lady Gaga and Hollywood instead of courses on Shakespeare and whatnot.
They have their own value, but we won't go there.
So if you have a rigorous program that teaches you how to write well, how to communicate well, mm-hmm. that can translate to a variety of jobs. But I also think it's good for students like that to develop quote-unquote hard skills outside the classroom. Mm-hmm. Web design, photography, journalism, communications, skills that could translate to an entry-level employer being able to say, yeah, I could see you being productive in 6 months. Mm-hmm. See, a liberal arts program does train your mind well if you apply yourself well, but then you also need to be able to communicate to that first-level hiring manager. The CEO might have a liberal arts degree right now.
Right.
Carly Fiorina has a degree in medieval history.
Yeah.
She worked in technology. Mm-hmm. So oftentimes you see these people who maybe go into business school after they get their undergrad. So we can translate into jobs, but you have to kind of sell yourself a little bit more.
Yeah.
I think now because there's more of a glut of graduates coming out with these degrees, and you had to separate yourself out. So internships, work experience, quote-unquote hard skills that can really be put on paper that for an employer to say, you know what, you're not going to be a risk to my employment situation.
I think you had something really interesting to say about the type of college you go to, whereas a lot of students will just assume that they need to go into the most prestigious school they can afford, or maybe they can't afford it and they're still going to go for it. Maybe they haven't gotten as much financial aid as they need. How should students weigh that based, you know, the name of the college, the reputation of the college, or the flip side? A lot of students will do this in terms of a Christian university. Like, I just need to go to a Christian university. They'll go and pay for a private Christian education that is more expensive than maybe going to a state school and finding a Christian group on campus. I mean, how it's almost like a security blanket of, or it's for the parents. You know, they're like, I don't want my kid to lose their faith, so they're going to go to this private Christian school. Right. I don't know. I mean, where should they factor the type of school into their decision?
So the number one thing that determines how well you do after college and during college is the person, not the pedigree of the school. Students and families tend to overestimate the reputation, the U.S. News and World Ranking number for that school. And what matters more is how hard you work, how smart you work, how much you develop yourself. You can actually get a great education at just about any school that has a library and has classrooms if you apply yourself well and you go get after it and find work experience along the way that would supplement your education to stand out to employers. That being said, we do tend to spend money on prestige. People will borrow crazy amounts of money to say they went to some top-tier, quote-unquote top-tier school. And the reality is the studies show 10, 20 years out, you would have done just as well had you gone to another school, and you have more debt for having spent more on the prestigious school.
Right.
Now, on the Christian school, I do have a little bit of a soft spot for Christian higher ed because I work in there, and I think we do provide a better value in terms of a nurturing environment, smaller class sizes, caring about our students. There are students who will succeed in our environment that would not have succeeded at a secular university environment. That having been said, I wouldn't want on my students, you know, $100,000 of debt when they graduate.
Yeah.
So I think you need to weigh the cost benefit and weigh who you are in terms of where you can be successful. Sometimes Christian schools actually don't cost as much as people think they're going to cost because of the institutional scholarships that are given out to students, especially if you have a strong academic record or if you're good at a sport and that school needs to build that team or that music group. You can get some pretty good scholarships that way. So I wouldn't rule it out because of the cost on paper. The part of the problem with college is the cost is so obscure. What you actually pay is not what the website says you're going to pay.
Okay.
What you actually pay is going to be a function of your need and your merit relative to other students and relative to that school's generosity, which is a function of their endowment and their other sources of income.
Yeah.
So if you have a school that's generous, and one of the things I talk about in the book is how to know which schools are more generous than others based on their past record of being generous to students like you.
Yeah.
So oftentimes the cost is not that much greater if you have the right background and right skill set. My wife was offered almost a full ride at a Christian school in the northwest part of the country because of her reputation in terms of her ACT, SAT score, those kinds of things. So oftentimes the Christian school will not necessarily be that much more expensive. And it depends on how much debt we're talking about. See, $15,000 of debt when you graduate is about $150 a month.
Yeah.
very doable for most people.
Yeah.
But when, it's when you get into the 40, 50,000 range where now you got private loans on top of federal loans and you can't even keep track of all the right. different loans you have. That's when you start to wonder, hey, was that really worth it, those 4 years?
Yeah. And you actually give a lot of great advice on the front end of the book just about manipulating the numbers, figuring out what you're actually paying for, the difference between private loans versus federal loans, and a ton of great websites that allow people to even do calculations, which is super awesome and all stuff that I never even availed myself of. Let's just be honest.
People. And it was written, just so you know, at the level that a college student who hates math can understand it.
Yeah.
I had a girl who read it who was an English major.
That was good.
And she said, I never took a math class in college.
There weren't any crazy algorithms to
exactly.
figure out. That was very helpful. All right. Let's talk about two scenarios for people that may actually be in our audience here. One is, I finished my degree. I'm trying to get into the workforce, but I can't find a good job. So I'm just going to go back to graduate school and try something else, or try, you know, I have a liberal arts degree. I can't do anything with it. So maybe I need to do something more specialized. That's scenario one. Or two, I got a degree and I hate it and I want to go into an entirely different career. Should I return to school and try something else? I had a friend that did this, got a PE degree at a 4-year university and went back to school for respiratory therapy and is now doing great. But she had to make that decision that, wow, I'm going to actually use nothing, I mean, figuratively nothing from her 4-year degree and start all over again. Pros and cons for those. I mean, how can a 20-something who now maybe isn't even at home and needs to support themselves make that kind of decision?
Right. So first of all, underemployment, being employed in a job that doesn't use your 4-year degree is not uncommon in the early years. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are going through it. What you want to distinguish is between if you're working in a job that has the potential to turn into something better or a job that is really not going anywhere and can't even go on your resume.
Yeah.
So if you're working at Starbucks, no offense to Starbucks, and you have a degree, a 4-year degree, that job probably can't go on your resume very well. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're working at a low level of a company that has a good reputation, a large company, it often almost doesn't matter what you're doing. Mm-hmm. Just being at that company is giving you a measure of identity capital.
Yeah.
It's going to help you leverage that on your resume to get a better job later on.
Yep.
So I wouldn't assume grad school is the right move, especially if you're going to have to pay for most of it.
Mm-hmm.
At grad school, you do have the advantage that if you can be a teaching assistant or a research assistant, you can get your bills almost entirely paid for.
Mm-hmm.
So there is that benefit. But I wouldn't just assume, hey, take on more debt for grad school and hope it's going to work out. That's not a good assumption.
Yeah. No, that's interesting. I think one other thing that was really helpful for me, because I spent much of my 20s just bouncing around, like trying to, I very much was in your trap of, I have this degree. I'm a super fun and interesting person. Quick on my feet. I will surely get an amazing job right out of college. That was certainly my assumption. I was applying for like editorial positions and all kinds of stuff and ended up doing a lot of temping. Okay, let's just be honest. But the good news is I found that actually temping was a great way to get your foot in the door into companies, because all of a sudden I'm being the executive assistant for the president of the company who he finds out I can put two sentences together, and then there ends up being a marketing position open and blah, blah, blah. So I think that would be a great thing to, you know, consider as well.
Yeah, that's an example of identity capital, because that company gave you a branding, so to speak, that helped you elevate yourself within the umbrella of that company.
Yeah, no, that's helpful. Also, Alex, let's talk just a little bit of the value of what you described as internships. And I mean, I found that when I hire people, the go-getters that have done a bunch of internships and utilized their summers to get into companies, get experience, start working, you know, social media angles or whatever, doing that for other people, even for themselves, are more interesting to me because it shows me that they've really plugged in and applied themselves and have taken on some skills. How would you say is the best way to maximize those kind of internships for students and even those who are heading out of college at this point?
Well, I think just if you do them, you're 10 times better off than if you don't do them.
Yeah.
But if you are doing them, how to maximize it, then I think just work as smart as you can, and as hard as you can, meet people, show value. A lot of times young people have the reputation, fair or unfair, among employers as they're in it for themselves. They're narcissists, they're self-centered, they're lazy, blah, blah, blah. But what the advantage for a young person today is that it's easy to overcome that stereotype. If you just stand out, if you serve and show value and don't look out for yourself and don't expect praise every half hour, you will stand out to your employers 10 times more, because they'll say, wow, I thought they were going to be like in the bottom of the barrel, and they ended up being, you know, outshining my expectations. It's easy to overcome low expectations.
Yeah.
Right. That's the advantage. But so I think just doing them, doing the best you can to show value, and then I think documenting objectively what you gave. I gave an example in the book of, you don't want to say, hey, I was an intern last summer at this newspaper. I think I can help you at your newspaper. Hmm. You want to say, I was an intern last summer, and I wrote 10 stories, and those stories were all read by 15,000 readers, and we sold more advertisements as a result of my articles. Mm-hmm. Things that are objective, that speak to your employer's interest. Mm-hmm. In other words, showing that you understand, hey, employer, you need to get more value from me than you pay me. Mm-hmm. I once had a boss when I was in my early 20s who drilled into us that if the company's paying you $40,000, we need you to deliver a value of $100,000. Hmm. Because your benefits cost this, your office space cost this, you need to give more value. And it helped me shift my thinking of, okay, how am I bringing value and how to speak in terms of in a way that will be understood and valued by them.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So kind of as we wrap here, let's talk to that that boundless audience member here who is probably well out of college. They're in their 20s now. They're like listening to this and they're like, okay, I fell into at least four of these traps. I now have a significant amount of debt. I have a monthly payment that is barely manageable, if that. I think a lot of young adults and young professionals underestimate the fact that they may need to totally go Dave Ramsey on themselves and just knuckle down and get this stuff done and knocked out, debt. So what you give a lot of principles in the book about just how to manage expenses, how to not just say, oh, I have a job and so now I can just spend freely on electronics and all this kind of stuff. What are some of the things that they need to keep in mind? Because you share, even the traps about you share the dangers of trying to consolidate loans or defer or, do a bunch of that stuff. What principles should they put in place to actually foresee some hope in knocking down their debt?
Yeah. So the whole last two chapters of the book are all about what to do after college. Mm-hmm. If it's too late to go back to college and do it differently, how do you work hard and save your money? And a lot of it's just really being focused and understanding what your options are for making back the payments. Mm-hmm. There are the options of income-based repayments. Mm-hmm. The government's being very willing now to let people get into these plans that only require you to pay back based on your income. Mm-hmm. And the reason I point that out is because the worst thing in the world to do is to default on your loan. Mm-hmm. Figure out what you can do to make that monthly payment smaller before you default. Once you default, it's very hard to wind back the clock, so to speak. Mm-hmm. But getting that monthly payment down and then keeping your expenses low. Maybe you do have to move in with your parents and you work some chores instead of paying them mm-hmm. rent, or you pay them a reduced rent. But yeah, it is about getting serious. I'm thinking of a student right now who is regularly telling my wife and I how much debt she has. But should we see her with a cup of mocha from Starbucks every other day? And so it's kind of like, do you understand what you're doing? So I think sometimes it's easy to say, well, I already owe $60,000. What's another $5? But that is the worst thing you can say to yourself. Make a plan. If it takes 3-4 years, get yourself a plan to get to zero. Mm-hmm. And once you have that plan, then maybe you won't always be perfect, but at least you'll have that plan to keep you bringing you back to where you should be going.
Yeah, good points. Well, folks, the book is Beating the College Debt Trap, Getting a Degree Without Going Broke. And again, there are absolutely things that you can read in here and be like, didn't do it perfectly when I was in school. Here's where I need to kind of shoulder some responsibility now, even looking back. And so hopefully this has been an encouragement to you. Thanks, Alex, for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Lisa.